Hello everybody, this is BL. Glad to see you all here. Let's go
Hello.
through.
Hello, this is Eva. Welcome everybody. And BL and I are really excited that so many of you have turned up and shown up and are ready for this work.
And we also have behind the scenes Risa here. She's contributed a lot to our presentation and will continue to do so. So we've got her here as an attendee right now, but we'll watch for comments and stuff from her because she's always got some great stuff for us. Okay, real quick here. Let's go through the drill. You guys have all seen this before. Questions, enter a question for the staff if you need to type something. If you see a little plus sign and you don't see the block, click the plus sign and you'll get the negative sign and it'll open it up for you. Set it to mic and speakers. Everybody's done that. I can see their speaker. Questions, raise your hand. The green up arrow means your hand is down and you have the opportunity to raise it. The red down arrow means your hand is already up and you have the opportunity to put it down. Keep everybody on mute to minimize the noise. And also keep yourself on self-mute. You can do that by either clicking the microphone here or here. If you are experiencing echoes or any kind of noisy problems or something, put yourself on self-mute first. If that doesn't solve the problem, then please type us a little note. Let us know that we've got a problem somewhere. Okay, this webinar is actually going to be recorded like the other ones are. It will be available. I'm not going to give you a PDF of this particular set because basically it's just the administrivia and a couple of charts. But what I will have is the information on how to participate in these webinars that I attach to the announcement. Okay, we are going to pause at certain points to take questions and comments. Raise your hand when that happens, and we will follow up as we usually do via the campus student union email to those who are signed up on the moirafed.com. And also send you the link to the recordings where you can find them on the MACARA website. Okay, anybody have any questions before we start? I don't see any hands go up, so first chart. Eva, you're up.
Okay, so before we begin, I believe that you have been sent a series of how-tos. And these how-tos, if you haven't yet printed them out, please do so. They were in amongst a variety of different emails that you received about this webinar. I know that they will be posted again with the recording. Brett will make sure that you will receive the how-tos. The how-tos are the templates that we will be using on how to move through the chart. It's important to have these guidelines. Many astrologers use different approaches. The approach that we are going to use is exactly as outlined for you in these how-tos. So what I would like to do is to begin looking at the chart, and what we're going to do is allow the eyes to just immediately focus on what it is that stands out for you in the chart. What is it that you see? I don't know about you, but I see that there's a lot of action going on below the horizon. You remember the horizon line? The horizon line starts at the ascendant, which is for me at Cancer, and goes right across to the other side, which is the descendant. This divides the upper part of the chart and the lower part of the chart. The upper part of the chart, if you remember, is the southern or the daylight. This is where you're out in the public. The lower part of the chart is the nighttime or the subjective, where you learn and grow internally and subjectively. Then there is also a vertical division. Now, one would think that it is straight up and down, but it isn't. and especially in my case, because of where I was born and the time I was born. So you want to look for that little arrow at the top that represents the MC. Okay, that would be the highest point in the chart, and if you follow it down, you would go from the MC down to the IC, the MC being the highest part in the chart, the IC, the Imam Kaleo, being the lowest point of the chart, which then divides left and right. Left side, and if you look at these little icons down at the bottom, these little circles, it divides it for you in case your eyes don't see it. So the vertical line shows that I have about 5 planets on the left side. That's the side that is the independent side. It's the side that is the ascendant side, and it tends towards dynamic or masculine tendency. And it's will-oriented. It is that which moves others. And it would be the sower of the seeds of karma. Now, the other side, the right-hand side, has, fairly evenly divided here between the two sides. It doesn't appear that way in everyone's charts, but it does in mine. So the right-hand side is known as the descendant side, and it is the receiver of energies. And so one person, the person would then be moved by other people or life circumstances. It's known as the feminine. Feminine is the receiver, right? Masculine is the one that pushes out. So it would be the reaper of the harvest of karma. So in my case, they seem to be fairly equal. Okay, then of course you can go a little further and you can divide it up into quadrants. And that would be the left icon, and you can see again there is nothing on the one quadrant, and a little bit on the opposite one to it, but most of the concentration is down below. Okay, so again, that speaks to learning things internally, and it tends to be a little bit more on the right-hand side. So again, I work well with others. You know, again, if I've got Libra, which I haven't talked about yet, I automatically work well with others. So that's the first thing we look at the chart. Now, you will notice that we have elements and modes in a legend there for you, and that also lets you know the strengths that I have in these particular areas. The modes by far outweigh, the cardinal mode by far outweighs the other two modes. You see that I am almost fully cardinal signs. What is cardinal? Cardinal is about will. It is about drive. It is about action. So basically, if I was to answer that, I would say, yeah, that applies to me. Then we move to elements. The element of air is definitely the strongest. And yeah, I spend a lot of time thinking. I'm a lot in my mind. I don't have a lot of fire, but I compensate for that with cardinality, which is action. And fire is, you know, you think of Mars, you think of fire as passion. Fire is outward going. It's a very masculine kind of energy. Well, even though I don't have a lot of fire, I kind of compensate that in a way by all the cardinality. Okay? And then I have a fair amount of water. Water, as we know, are our emotions, it's our sensitivities, it's our feeling nature. So that's just an overview of the chart. You know, you learn a lot about a person just from these little things that we've gone through. So what have you learned so far before we do anything else? You know that I learn and I grow through internal, subjective, mulling things over, introspection, brooding over a new thought, a new idea. That's how I grow. And that's very, very true. That's exactly how my modus operandi is. The other thing you have here is other legends. For those of you that need to know the aspects, there is a little legend on the right top, and it shows you the aspects, what is aspecting with what. But of course, you need to know what the signs represent, don't you? You need to know what a square is, you need to know what an opposition is, a conjunction. So that little, where you see the cursor moving, that kind of tells you the most important ones. And then you look to the right and you see what the aspects are. So these are legends to help you out. Many times astrologers don't create that on a astrological chart. And then further down, you've got the names of everything with their glyphs. So again, familiarity with the glyphs and how they are seen in the chart always helps. So that's a little bit of foreplay before we get into the main event. So what are we going to start with? As an esoteric, and I want to emphasize this, as an esoteric astrologer, I have been taught by a lot of excellent, excellent esoteric astrologers, including Michael, that the ascendant is the most important point in the chart. The ascendant is the one on the horizon on the left. It is the chart, it represents the ruler that then rules the chart. The ruler of that particular sign rules the entire chart. It also then affects the very first house, because it is the sign that's on the cusp of that very first house. And that very first house represents you. It's about you as an ego. It's about you. You're born. Remember, you're born into life. So there's so much about you that is represented in that first house. So that goes hand in hand then with the way you put yourself out in the world, the way others see you in the world, and the ascendant is so important. So let's look at the ascendant. First of all, it's Cancer. Cancer is water. So automatically, there is a lot of water there for me. It is cardinal. So Cancer is water, cardinal. And what are some of the characteristics of Cancer, and how do they apply to me? Well, we know that Cancer is very protective. It has this outer shell with a very soft and inner and sensitive inside. And because it's water, it's about feelings and our emotions. And I would say that I am sensitive. I am easily hurt. But I don't necessarily show it, right? I have this outer Cancer shell that kind of keeps those emotions inside, doesn't readily show how I feel, but I'm very protective. I'm very protective of family. Cancer represents, normally it represents the fourth house, and the fourth house is all about family. Cancer is about the larger family. If you take it out of the personal, it is humanity en masse, but it's also about me, my personal family, my family, whatever the family represents for me. So very protective. It's a feminine side, so you know, I do all the protective things within family. It is ruled by, actually, before I speak about what it's ruled at, let's look at the keynotes. The keynotes are always very, very important for your sun, your moon, and your ascendant. The angle that represents the form, or the personality angle, is let isolation be the rule, and yet the crowd exists. So from a personality perspective, and I think you're asking yourself, why would she be talking about personality when the ascendant is the representative of soul purpose? And that would be a very good question to pose for yourself. And that has to do with the fact that we appropriate qualities of lesser vibration as well as qualities of higher vibration. Always it depends on our filters, on where we're at, on our point of evolution. So naturally we would absorb or appropriate lesser qualities. So how does the isolation being the ruler or the rule, and the crowd exists. The only way I can actually interpret that for myself and say that this is how it applies to me is I enjoy sitting with my books. I enjoy studying. I enjoy hibernating and watching good programs on television. I enjoy all of that. I don't need to have anybody else around. But that doesn't necessarily last all that long. That sort of is a comfort. It's a comfort that I have always found that I enjoy. So in that respect, I'm aware that, you know, life goes on. There's my family. There is my teachings. There is my schooling. There is my center that I used to run. So there's a lot that went on with that, but I still enjoyed the retreating, hibernating, and being with my books, with my study. I don't want any noise. I don't want the TV on. I don't want the radio on. I don't want background, anything, and just being involved in that. So in that respect, I do see that applying to me. So on a more elevated level, on a soul level, the keynote for Cancer is, I build a lighted house and therein dwell. Well, I don't need to assure you, but I have sat with this keynote for so long, really, really eating it up, trying to really get a good sense of what it is for me. Well, what is the house? The house could be many things. It could be my temple, my home, my house, which is me. It could represent my family, the larger house, and it could represent even the larger house as my group. It could represent the group that I am teaching, and eventually it could even represent my ashram. All of those are interpretations for the house. And I build a lighted house, so whatever I have built, it's lighted. It's lighted because soul, my essence, has then permeated into that which I have built, and therein dwell. So I dwell within this lighted area. And I have often seen that as a lighthouse. A lighthouse that has a light that attracts others to it, whether they are in need, whether they are lost, or whether they just want more. They are somehow attracted to this light that is me, really. And I have worked, obviously, on this for most of my life, in incorporating qualities of soul into my being so that that light can shine forward. And that's how I do see myself. So that would be the lower interpretation and the higher interpretation of what those keynotes do mean for me. So now, what is the ruler of the chart? The ruler of the chart, on an exoteric level, is the moon. Right there. The moon is in Capricorn. And the moon is opposite, directly opposite, because it's 5 degrees versus 0 degrees. So it's within the 7-degree range, and some people go as far as 8 degrees, 7-degree range, and so there it's an opposition. Remember what an opposition looks like? It looks like two dumbbells with a line between them, right? The moon in Capricorn. Well, our moon, my moon, is about our feelings, and it's about our past, and it's about our lines of least resistance. But it's in Capricorn, and Capricorn is Earth. And as I've always seen Capricorn, it reminds me of a mountain. And mountains are hard. You know, they're hard. And you don't see what's doing inside a mountain. You've got to dig deep to see the innards of a mountain. So my feelings, again, are not that obvious. They're not that easily and readily shown. Again, I keep it inside. So I have Cancer, which keeps my feelings inside, and I have my moon in Capricorn, which keeps my feelings kind of inside. So I'm not always that, my feelings are not always that close to the surface. I don't necessarily get upset that easily. I don't necessarily cry that easily. I'm not all that emotional. Does that mean it's buried? I don't think so. I mean, I've been very conscientious of that. It's just not that out there, okay? So it's in Capricorn. Capricorn is about motivation and motivation to achieve, motivation to do one's best to get to the top, to be successful. And you know, all my life, I've always been an achiever. I've always worked very hard, and being successful at whatever I undertook was important for me. As a matter of fact, my husband always says to me, I don't know anyone that has as much confidence in anything that they do as you do. Little does he know that it's not always the case. It just appears like I do. Again, I don't show any kind of nervousness or those kinds of emotions. They're certainly not out there for others to see. So there is a certain confidence that I have that comes through, I think, Capricorn, because Capricorn has a certain kind of stature, a certain hardness to it, and responsibility. Now, the ruler of Capricorn, now I didn't want to jump into the moon. I, you know, would have liked to have gone in order and gone to the sun, but you can see how one thing leads to another, and sometimes you cannot follow the exact method that we've outlined for you. The ruler of my moon in Capricorn is Saturn, and Saturn is in Cancer. Cancer being the ascendant. So, so you see what we have here? We have the ruler of the moon is in Cancer, and the ruler of Cancer is in Capricorn. And so it is called in astrology mutual reception. They're mutually opposite, right? The ruler of one is in the other, and the ruler of the other is in the other. Kind of get what I mean here? So it kind of underscores them both. And the word responsibility, as I've said many, many times, is almost like it's stamped on my forehead. Responsibility has always dropped on my lap. As a child, my mother gave me tremendous amount of responsibility that most kids don't have. I had to look after my sister. I had to look after the house. I had to help cook. I had so much responsibility as a young kid growing up. Well, you know what? Even as an adult, I take it on. Maybe because I have the confidence to know that I can do it, or maybe it's dumped on me and I just automatically take it on. I don't know which, but I do take on responsibility. So you see, Saturn in Cancer makes me take on responsibility, and I'm a hard worker. Again, my moon in Capricorn, Saturn, and Saturn is right next to Mars. See? It's conjoined, or the conjunction of Mars and Saturn together. So if Saturn represents work, workload, and Mars is there, Mars would make it even more work. I put a lot of effort, Mars, effort, forward drive, push to get work done. And it's in the first house. It's the house of me. The house of ego, the house of me. So you can see how the things I'm describing to you so much represent who I am and how I move forward in the world. And just looking at the moon, looking where the ruler is placed, says so much already about me. And you've already learned about the ascendant. Now, what is the esoteric ruler of the ascendant? It is Neptune. And Neptune begins my whole stellium. Stellium means three or more planets all together in one sign, and in this case it's in Libra. So Neptune represents the esoteric ruler of my Cancer ascendant. Neptune, as we know, can be interpreted in many different ways. If we look at Neptune exoterically, it could be a certain kind of fogginess, a certain kind of illusion, lack of clarity. It could also represent ideals. And I've seen many, many writings about Neptune that they represent something musical or something artistic. And am I that? Yeah, to some degree. I certainly was much more artistic, or at least had an interest in artistic qualities in my younger years. I took up art, I can sew, I can make things, very good with working with things around the house. Now, Neptune, in its very, very interesting position, is also the ruler of my chart because I've got Cancer rising. So I have the moon and I have Neptune. Those two are the rulers of my chart. Neptune forms a T-square. Do you see how it forms a T-square? So you've got Neptune at the bottom and it's squaring my moon in Capricorn. My moon in Capricorn is at 0 degrees. Neptune is at 6 degrees. They are both on the cardinal cross. So that's one square. And then my Neptune also squares my ascendant, which is at 5 degrees. Neptune is at 6 degrees, and they're all on the cardinal cross. So I form a T-square, which makes Neptune even that much stronger in my chart. Now, a much higher interpretation of Neptune could be that it's Buddhic. And you know what? I kind of like to think of it that way. Why do I say that? How I see Neptune working out in my life is I'm quite intuitive. I kind of get things. I don't even have to sometimes question it. I've had to learn to trust my intuition, to really trust it, not to second guess myself. So that's how I see Neptune working out for me in my chart. Now, Neptune squaring my moon, the most common traditional interpretation of this is that the moon can represent the mother, right? Because it's the feminine sign in the chart. My mother would have loved to have merged Neptune herself with me. My mother was crazy about me. She lived vicariously through me. I could do no wrong for her. She showed me off to her friends. She constantly commented that I have golden hands because whatever I did, she couldn't get over what I did. I sewed curtains and I made all kinds of things for her, for ourselves. And it doesn't matter what I did, I could do no wrong. She was crazy about me. I can't say that about my father, but I can certainly say that about my mother. That is the square you see that. On the other hand, if we interpret it slightly higher, there is a real strong connection with the sensitivities that I have, and maybe there isn't always the clarity because of Neptune and the moon being the emotions. Maybe there isn't always the clarity that I might have about what it is I'm feeling. I know it's there somewhere, but it's elusive. I can't put my finger on it. And you know what? That happens to me a lot, where I become aware that my astrality is somehow not quite, what's the word I want to use? Not quite smooth, not quite in balance, not quite relaxed or soft. I'm aware that there are slight undulations and slight little ripples in the waters, and I can't always pinpoint what it is. So I ask myself, because I spend a lot of time in my mind, what is this all about? What is bugging me here that I can't put my finger on? And if I ask long enough, bingo, I kind of get it, right? And that's where hopefully it's soul or booty coming in, and I kind of, that's what it is. And as soon as I label it and I know what it is that's bothering me, it stops bothering me. So that's an interesting combination of moon, Neptune for me. Now, I just want to go back to something else. Saturn, which was the ruler of the moon, squares my sun. I haven't even gone to the sun yet, but it squares my sun. Saturn represents can represent a male component, or the sun can represent the male component. So male, my father is usually represented by the sun and Saturn. So there's kind of hardships there, you know. My mom and dad did not get along, and my mother confided in me constantly about my father. So I grew up with not the best image of my dad. Not that I didn't get along with him, but he certainly wasn't that close to me as my mother was, you see. That's why I use the word merge with my mother and me. I just want to bring that up because that's looking at it from a traditional perspective. Okay, so I'm going to move now into my son and talk to you a little bit about my son. My son, it represents the personality, and the personality is in the sign of Libra. What is Libra all about? Libra is about balancing, right? And the exoteric keynote for Libra is let choice be made. Let choice be made. So you kind of ask yourself, well, am I constantly needing to make choices? And I will say to you, absolutely, I still am. Because I'm constantly editing everything I have to say. Constantly editing. Should I say this? Should I not say this? Will this upset somebody? Will this hurt someone's feeling? Constantly editing and making choices on how I relate, Libra, how I relate with others. I think it's the story of my life. And I always want peace. I always want everything in harmony. I always want good relations, Libra. So I'm constantly editing. And what I've had to learn as I've matured and as I've gotten older is not to give myself away. In other words, to stand in my own strength, my own will, and say what is true to me, even though it may not be the nicest thing to say to someone else. But because it's a Libra, and Libra can be very diplomatic, I have learned to say things in a way, I think, that is diplomatic, that is not in your face, that is not insulting, that is not hard on anybody. So that's the Sun in Libra. On a more traditional way of looking at the Sun in Libra, it's the hostess with the mostess. And boy, can I be the hostess with the mostess. I love to entertain. I kind of know how to be with people and how to get along with people, and I do that very, very easily. And you will note that because it's a stellium, all those planets are squashed together. So I cannot divorce myself from having my Jupiter there, having my Neptune there, and having my Mercury there, which means my mind is in Libra, which is air. My Jupiter, a lot of Libra, is there. And of course, Neptune. All of these mean that I spend a lot of time thinking about how to have right relations. I really do. I spend a tremendous amount of how to have right relations. You know, if before I ever got into anything esoteric, if you asked me, what is it that motivates you the most? And I would have answered, keeping everything balanced and in harmony and equilibrium. If my husband, who tends to be a little bit more aggressive than me, would ever get into a discourse or an argument with somebody at the dinner table, I thought I was going to die a thousand deaths. It churned inside of me. It's like, what can I say to smooth things out? What can I say to bring balance back into this discussion? Always, always there was this need and this urge to make everything nice. Well, by making everything nice, I became a pleaser in my early years. I pleased. I pleased my teachers. I pleased my mentors. I pleased my husband until I learned to stand in my own strength, in my own will, and my own sense of who I am as I develop more and more. And that's why I said that. These are all things I had to learn. The ruler of Libra on an exoteric level is Venus. Venus is in Virgo. Okay? Venus, as you know, is the goddess of love. It's the goddess of values. It's the goddess of appreciation. It's wanting to beautify and be in a beautiful relationship with everything. Now, it finds itself in an earth sign. And in Virgo, Virgo is about the matters. It's about the details of the physical plane life. And I do spend a lot of time in my environment, and it's in the fourth house, my home, being almost, you know what I mean, kind of perfect, you know, like I don't want to sound like I'm compulsive, but in some areas I am, where it's kind of everything has its place, everything is neat, everything has to be pretty and nice and attractive. And when I set a table, it's painstaking to set a table and how exacting everything is laid out, and the centerpieces and the glasses and everything. I'm known in the house as a nag because I'm after my grandkids and my family, put things away, don't leave a mess, that kind of thing. So Venus and Virgo in the fourth house, this plays out very, very strongly for me. It's also when I turn out a composition or I turn out a paper or I do PowerPoints, the beauty of it, the exactness of it is very important to me. It has to be centered. You know, I want to beautify it all the time, bold certain things, make sure the spelling is right. There's a level of perfection in the form that I constantly go after. I do believe that's Venus and Virgo. Venus on a higher turn of the spiral, as we all know, is about the mind and about the light within the mind. It's about synthesis. So again, I try to synthesize whatever it is that I'm doing on the physical plane so that it is, it's just that. It's just attractive and perfected, and I don't have to spend too much time in all the little details, which I still do. Okay, so my stellium is in the fifth house. The fifth house is the house of creativity and self-expression. And because we are using this particular house system, Rio Montanus, it moves everything for me into the fifth house. With a different house system, like a Koch house system, everything sits in the fourth house. So what I have learned over the years is you have to apply both houses to oneself. It's not one or the other. It's one and the other. So the fourth house is all about home, family, and for certainly a great portion of my life, that was the most important thing. Now, for this latter portion of my life, I would say that my creativity is the most important thing, and my self-expression. And the fifth house is also the house of soul and the causal body. So that, too, is all about expressing who I am, expressing the soul that I am. And it comes out, hopefully, in my work that I do, in the teachings that I do, and so on. Now, I feel I've talked a tremendous amount. Oh, I still haven't. I was going to ask BL to jump in, but let me just finish with one more thing here, and that is the esoteric ruler of the sun sign, which is Uranus, and it's up in the 12th house. And if you'll note, Uranus is really the only planet above the horizon. We're not counting here the Earth, because the Earth is always opposite the sun, irrespective of where your sun is. But Uranus is the higher octave of Mercury. So, and it's in an air sign, Gemini. So, and it trines my sun. It's a very wide trine, very, very wide trine to my Mercury. So, you know, Uranus can come up with all kinds of different ways of being and doing things and creative, and so I think that kind of helps me with my creativity. It's supposed to be a high focus planet because it is above the horizon, and I could say more and more with it, but I think I've talked an awful lot, so I'm going to ask BL to jump in and comment and ask questions of anything that I that has stirred her in what I've said.
Hi, Eva. Of course, the first thing I look at is all this stuff in here. So I really liked the T-square that you pointed out between your ascendant, your descendant, and Neptune. Okay, but you also have another one with the Sun-Earth axis and Saturn here. Mm-hmm. So you have several focuses there with the rulers. of your ascendant, your moon, and your sun working together. Now, of course, squares we know are challenges, but they're also opportunities. They don't come easy to us, but they give us our greatest lessons. So I think that's very indicative of the work that you're doing with those.
And I want to point out, since you're talking about Neptune, I have not gone into the MC, but it's also the ruler of the MC, which again just gives it that much more power.
Right, right. So, does anybody else have any comments? Raise your hand if you have some comments that you'd like to add or questions about Eva's chart. Well, I don't see any questions. I don't see any hands raised.
So, don't be shy, guys.
One of the things that I thought was interesting, and you'll see it a little bit later when we get to mine, is that of the three of us working closely on this project, Risa has a Libran ascendant, Eva has a Libra sun, and I have a Libra moon. Uh-huh. So we all have that air Libra cardinal quality going for us in a little different aspects. I still see no hands, so let me use that as a segue to go into mine. Did you have anything else you wanted to say?
No, I think I've talked a lot, and I think there's a lot there to take in. So let's leave it at that. I'm sure there's more that can be said, obviously, on different levels, but I've covered, I think, the most important points.
And that's one of the key points that I want to point out. There's so much, and you learn it in so many different ways, but you have to isolate it into small bites to take, and that's what we're trying to do here with just the ascendant, the sun, and the moon. You know, there's so many different things we could talk about, but just talking about those three things, Eva brought in almost her whole chart, and I'm going to do the same thing. So nothing is in isolation. Hold on, we've got a question here from Yvonne. Go ahead, Yvonne, please.
Show me T-squares slowly.
Okay, hold on just one second here. I like to draw pictures.
Oh, it's amazing that you can do this.
So let me draw a picture. This is one of her T-squares that involved her ascendant, her moon, and the ruler of her ascendant, Neptune. See, it's half of a square. It's half of that cardinal cross. She's missing the point that goes up this way.
Okay, that's what I couldn't make a T out of it. I couldn't understand it.
Yeah, well, that's what it is. It's a T square, which is half of the cross. See, the cross would have gone up this way, filled the cross, but she didn't have
the opposite.
She doesn't have this point, so this is.
So a T square is like a triangle then.
It's like a triangle, but it's not like a triangle. A triangle is a trine. It's three things working together. And this is four things that should be working together, and there's a missing point. And so that changes the whole focus. The trine is a harmonic aspect, and the square is not so harmonic. So there's a big difference in the way we look at it. So I wouldn't like to characterize it as a triangle. But okay. You see so what's going on here?
Yeah, so the trine would be all water elements or fire elements, and the T-square wouldn't.
Right.
Yes, the T-square would be the elements, the modes, the cardinal, fixed, or mutable, where, like you said, the other is the elements. That's the difference there.
Okay. And Yvonne,
yes.
What is said is that in many respects a T-square could be harder to live with than a full grand cross, which is what BL has drawn here, because it's constantly seeking that other point that doesn't exist. for an outlet. You see, so for me, the Neptune, which is at the bottom of that, see, the horizon or the opposite, the two opposites balance each other out eventually. But the fact that I have this this Neptune down at the bottom and it doesn't have an outlet, it is the one that takes the greatest brunt, so to speak, because it doesn't have the opposite to balance it out.
Okay, thank you.
And it's the one that's constantly, it's the one that's constantly square with the other two sides, you know.
Yeah, it's squared, it really helps when you do it in color, highlight it, how you're making these, you know, trines or squares and that, because there's so many lines it gets confusing. Thank you.
Right. The other thing is she's going to get this full cross, but it's going to come in fits and starts because, you know, the sun passes.
Hello?
I'm coordinated enough Hello? To do this. The sun, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. The sun passes through, oh, I'm sorry, it was my lack of coordination. The sun passes through, you know, once a year. The moon's going to pass through once a month. So things are going to come through that are going to give her that full cross at different points. And so
through
then
transits.
All of a sudden, right,
through,
right.
Through and, transits.
And then all of a sudden she's going to have to deal with it. So, yeah, it's the T-square can be a lot more volatile in our life than learning to live with the cross that we might have been born with. Okay? Did you have something else, Yvonne? Or?
No, I have to click this thing. Okay, thanks.
Okay, I fixed it. Okay, I don't see any other hands, so let me move on right now to my chart. Okay? Let's look again like Eva did. Let's start with the little counts that we've got down here at the bottom. I've got a good balance of the east-west, but definitely an imbalance between the northern and southern hemisphere. I share that with Eva. Three of my modes look fairly balanced. But I'm light on the earth element here. And we actually had a question about this from Linda last time around, so I'd like to address this a little bit. I actually think that I'm fairly well balanced in all of my elements. I think that I'm practical and down-to-earth person, which are earth-like attributes, okay? This just goes to show that why the counts can and do actually tell us a lot. We can't just take them at face value. Something is always going on behind the scenes with us. For example, Mercury is my exoteric ruler of my chart, and it's in the second house, which is a Taurian house with an Earth-like component. Venus is my esoteric ruler, and she's in Virgo, another Earth sign. So even though I don't have a strong Earth presence, the two rulers of my chart have that Earth-like component that adds to my well-rounded elemental life there. So I think I'm well-rounded everywhere except for this. I have to agree 100% with this. My northern hemisphere is very heavy. Means I'm very introverted, and alone time is definitely how I recharge. It's a good thing that I have my son in Leo. It gives me a Leo, a sunny little personality, or I'd be a hermit. I'd love to be a hermit. And I think these are things that Eva talked about. Her Libra sun gets her out there. Her Libra stellium gets her out there and makes her sociable. My Leo sun makes me get out of the house. Both of us would love to be hermits. All right. My most important thing, my Gemini ascendant. Gemini on the ascendant, anything on the ascendant, is going to set the pattern for all of my houses. So that's the mandala for my chart, where my signs are actually going to be sextile to the traditional ruler. This would normally be the Aries house, and now it's a Gemini house. So that's sextile relationship, and all of my houses are going to have that. So that's an affinity with the normal placement. Last webinar, I likened it to a citizen of a friendly nation living temporarily in a foreign country. It's a smooth arrangement because they're friendlies, and it's going to provide me new opportunities regarding the way I experience my houses, regarding the way I experience my environment. The exoteric keynote of Gemini from the form side is let instability do its work. I can actually relate to having multiple interests and being the perpetual student, but I think I've actually moved beyond the instability and most of the negative characteristics that we find with Gemini. I don't think I have an indifference to others, but I guess my liking to be a hermit may confirm this a little bit. Contempt of mental limitations in others, being inconsistent, superficial, indecisive, having a lack of focus and nervous. Not so much any of these things. I don't think I have a contempt for anyone. And the other in that laundry list? No, not really. Let's instability do its work? No. I think that my Leo sun is too fixed in its ways to put up with any instability. So I don't think I'm really working from the lower angles of Gemini. I also think that I've been able to cultivate a few of the Gemini soul qualities, strength, patience, and endurance. Maybe not so much with the intuition, clear intelligence, and serene temper, but hey, we all have something that we need to be working on, and those are mine. I can be adaptable, versatile, and enthusiastic. I still need work on the eloquent, the witty, and the intellectual, probably. Let me see. I think I can relate to both rulers, Mercury and Venus. I express a little of my esoteric ruler Venus in Virgo, just exactly like Eva had in the fourth house. She brings out the analyst in me, which I happen to think is a good thing. She does bring a little of that OCDC in there, too. I can do that. I love all these little counts down here. Aren't they fun? I love spreadsheets. I love the lists of positives and negatives for the signs. I take those puppies, I dump them into a spreadsheet. I mix them this way, rack and stack them. Oh, I play with them all different kinds of ways. I love those little pivot tables, you know, look at it a bunch of different ways. That's how I look at myself, and that's how I look at others. That's what Venus in Virgo does for me. When we look at the relationships between my ascendant and its rulers, we see that they play well together. 22 Gemini, 24 Cancer, 24 Virgo. In fact, we see that Venus, my esoteric ruler, is square the ascendant. I've got another one of those T-squares with Mars there. She's sextile. Mercury and Venus combo right there. She's semi-sextile to Pluto and Neptune, flanking her on both sides. And then, as I mentioned, she's square Mars in that T-square, which is a major avenue of growth for my soul, just like it was with Eva, only hers was cardinal and mine is mutable. Mercury is also at 24 degrees, so the same can be said of my exoteric ruler as my esoteric ruler. They play well with everything in my chart. The aspects are going to be a little different for the exoteric than they were for the esoteric, but any interaction is good, and they interact with most of the other planets in my chart. Okay, I've got Sun in Leo. So I'm a Geminian with Leo tendencies. I see things through that Leo personality. And then what do I want to do? I want to tell everyone all about my personal experience as a teaching tool to spread the word. That's the two of these things here working together in a nutshell. It can actually be confirmed if we look another way. Mercury and Gemini traditionally rule the third house, and that's the house where my sun is. So again, it's another Geminian Leo type expression there. My soul and my personality basically have similar objectives here. The Leo sun personality drawbacks are many, and they include that ever popular pride, willfulness, being headstrong, impatient, arrogant, obstinate, quick to anger, lack of sympathy, and lack of reverence. Okay, I've been called each and every one of those a time or two. Ambitious, unforgiving temper, and desire to control others, not really me at all. So I think I've moved away from some of the Leo personality drawbacks and the Leo keynote, let other forms exist, I rule because I am. I don't think that's me. I also think I have been able to integrate my personality somewhat, and that it is in the process of being infused by my soul. Not there yet, but I'm working on it. So I have some good traits from my Leo Sun Aquarian Earth axis. This axis here. Let me see. They work well towards my soul purpose. Strength, courage, steadfastness. Sounds like a little Boy Scout, doesn't it? From Leo to some extent, but still working on the capacity to grasp great questions in a large-minded way and of handling other people when needed. I don't want to handle people. I want to be that hermit, remember? Aquarius brings accuracy, perseverance, common sense, independence, and intellect. And I think I'm working on that. The offset of that give and take of that Sun-Earth axis, the Leo-Aquarian axis, has always been important to me, and that's how come I address it this way. The exoteric issues of that Leo-Aquarian axis is the personal versus impersonal, creative versus uniqueness. I relate best to the personal, and I'm learning to transform that into the impersonal. This is the personal, this is the impersonal. The esoteric purpose of the Leo-Aquarian axis is self-mastery leading to group awareness and eventually selfless world service. This is something that I am working on, and unconsciously, unaware, I translated that for a need to join the service. I worked for the Air Force in one capacity or another for about 40 years, and that is now morphing into the service activity that I do as part of the Moira Federation. So I've got that going for me both exoterically and esoterically. The exoteric issue with the third and ninth houses is to keep your curiosity about life alive, curiosity, while having clear priorities about what's important to you to learn, to understand, to explore. I've always been curious about things and love being able to explore the many countries in Europe that I lived in, courtesy of the military as both a service member and then a dependent wife for many years over there. The higher spiritual purpose of the third ninth house axis is to access and use the ancient wisdom via the higher mind, the ancient wisdom via the higher mind, which I personally think is a good description of being a perpetual student of the Blue Books. So I see myself in these keynotes that we have for both the Ascendant and the Sun. If we look for another angle, because remember that's what I do, I look at all the different angles, right? The Sun is in Leo, veiling Neptune exoterically. Esoterically, and Neptune is in Libra, in my fifth house, which is the Leo house. The keynote for this esoteric ruler in Libra is I choose the way which lead between the two great lines of force, which is how I just described that I always have looked at my Sun and Earth working out. And I can also, of course, relate to the Leo's keynote, I am that and that am I. I think that the influence of my soul has broadened my understanding of the fact that we are part of the one soul. So that's both a component of my ascendant working with my Sun as well as the Aquarian attitude of my Earth. My Sun at 11 Leo is quintile Neptune at 23 Libra, and that quintile indicates a talent or ability earned in a prior life that's helping me now. In other words, this is work I've previously done in past lifetimes that brings me to this point, this time, for the work that I'm supposed to be doing now. let me see, translated, that means that I'm a half full kind of a person, that little sunny Leo, half full, glass half full person. I always see things as an opportunity for soul growth and some higher personality expression working in cooperation toward that Gemini soul goals and keynotes. I recognize my other self, and in the waning of that self, I grow and glow. Remember that Leo Aquarius polarity, personal versus impersonal? That's similar to that Gemini keynote, isn't it? So my personality and soul have similar goals working in concert. And what are some of my drawbacks? That Libran prison of my soul, aka the moon, it makes me want to weigh and balance both sides of everything, just like Eva was talking about. I want to be fair. The moon, let me see, I want to tell you in infinite detail about everything I've explored when I weighed both sides. That's my Gemini Leo thing. Adding in there. I've got that little bit of the mutual reception here. Moon in Libra veiling Vulcan, which my Vulcan has to be in Leo because it's going to be within 8 degrees of the Sun and my Sun's at 11 degrees. So little mutual reception with the Moon veiling Vulcan and the Sun veiling Neptune, Leo, Libra right there. Let me see, Moon in Libra issues, intellectual pride, isolation, absent-mindedness, obstinacy, selfishness. Yeah, I can probably own those, and I can on occasion also be detached and self-indulgent. Then there's unreliable, superficial, laid-back, and decisive. No, I don't think I can own any of those. I think I've moved away from that Libran keynote, let choice be made, and I relate more to the soul keynote. Other notable relationships that tell me I've begun the work of integrating the personality and establishing at least some direction from the soul. Leo Sun rules the fifth house, and my moon is in the fifth house. Sun at 11 Leo, moon at 15 Libra are sextile each other, favorable relationship that fosters accord between them. And remember, these are the two luminaries in my chart from an exoteric angle. So it's allowing my personality to flourish and help work on the imperfections of those past patterns that I need to overcome. Notice neither of these two, my two luminaries, play well with the others. They are not at the 24 degrees thereabout that the other ones are at. But we did see relationships between them. They weren't completely isolated, right? So there is interaction going on between them. There's just more than one way to skin a cat. So bottom line here, I think my moon and sun are working to some of the higher expressions as they build that bridge and develop the rapport with my Gemini soul. But like many of you, I have a long way to go. I'd like to add to what Eva was saying about the parents. The sun represents the father or the authority figure. The moon represents the mother or the nurturing figure. My father's moon was actually, I mean, my father's sun is actually in Libra, and he was at a point our nurturer. As he was going to college, my mother worked, put him through college, and he was the one taking care of us. But my father is also, with the sun in Libra, he is definitely a black or white kind of a person. And that made him go to extremes that I didn't necessarily like. My mother, on the other hand, I don't know what she had in Libra, but she was very balanced, and it was how I perceived her. She was very balanced. She saw the inconsistencies with my father. He actually played favorites. I was one of his favorite. I had another brother who was a favorite. My older brother was not a favorite, and my mother tried very hard to be fair with all of us to offset the imbalance that my father had. So that's an exoteric expression of that. My father was the ruler of our little castle. Everything revolved around him. That was the way he was raised. That was the way his father raised their family, and that was the way he expected our family to be raised. So those are just a little side notes of how that stuff works out. It's more my perception of them than anything, and that's why my chart is the one that's expressing the way I look at them. Okay, let me see. I think I've talked about everything except for my angles. Like Eva, I have my midheaven very close to hers, conjunct, in Pisces, and my nadir in Virgo. The esoteric issue with this Virgo Pisces are analytical versus idealistic, discriminating versus fanatical. The esoteric issues with this axis is nurturing the Christ within the heart and bringing it into conscious manifestation. I think I can relate to both of those, and they fit in with my soul-infusing personality. So that's me in a nutshell. Eva, anything exciting you've seen in my chart or my behavior patterns that you'd like to add to this?
Yes, you can almost consider yourself a genius here. You have your Mercury and your Uranus at exactly the same degree. That is known as a combust, and that is, especially if you consider that Uranus is the higher octave of Mercury, makes you a very, very smart person. How do you relate to that?
Well, I don't. you know, the Cancer stellium should give me some of that, and the Neptune in Libra should give me some of that intuition. And it's there, but can I articulate it? Not so much sometimes, because my little fallen Venus in Virgo here, you know, makes me that over-analytical who complicates everything with all of my charts and tabulations and things like that. So it's a matter of being able to relate more, and I don't, because I've got everything down here in the bottom half. The little hermit in me needs to be brought out more. So yeah, you know, I was trying not to go there with that, but you can't divorce them. You cannot separate these two. This is the exoteric ruler of my chart, and Uranus is the higher octave sitting right smack dab on. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you can't really separate that, and that is intuitional. If only I could tap into that a little bit better. I do have those flashes of insight, but again, it's something I need to work on articulating more. So in a way that people can understand. My problem is the way too analytical.
Mm-hmm.
So any other comments?
Sometimes when we see our Mercury in a water sign, we could say there's a comma manus quality to that. Is that something that works for you still, or have you surpassed that? Are you still working on that?
I think I've mostly surpassed it. I mean, obviously, I have not taken the second initiation yet, so I still have a lot of that aspect in there. But I think that my Cancer stellium, to me, is more about sensitivity than it is about emotionalism. And I have a heck of a lot of sensitivity. Self-sensitivity, in other words, I take things so personally. It's not a desire aspect of it, though. It's a, oh my God, it hurt my poor little feelings aspect.
And with Cancer, do you hide it?
Well, I do kind of hide my emotions somewhat, and actually I think for the most part my emotions are very on an even keel. But it shows up for me in all my allergies and asthma and food allergies, environmental allergies, and all that kind of stuff. So it's like maybe I'm trying to suppress the emotions, but they're showing up for me in other ways. In other words, you can run, but you can't hide.
Which is interesting, because Pluto is in Leo, as is your Sun, so it's going to bring it forth to the surface and maybe like your personality or your yourself in some way, which
Yeah, my in-your-face personality self, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And like me, there's a real similarity here between the way our charts are laid out. Like me, you have a high-focus planet. You have a planet above the horizon, one, which in your case is Mars. In my case, it was Uranus. So Mars plays an important role. It is opposite your ascendant. It is squaring your ruler of the chart. So speak a little bit more to all of that.
Well, that's a T-square that I did, in fact, mention.
But how does it play out for you?
Yeah, this is my idealistic Mars. I see that goal. I reach the goal and see another. I'm always very idealistic in this regard. I actually do see that playing out as a very significant thing in my chart. It's hard for me to...
It's hard to talk about
identify.
Myself.
It is. It's hard for me to identify, but I can't divorce it from my ascendant. I can't divorce it from Venus. They work together there. It is a square, but it's it works well together, actually, for me.
I've often wondered or seen when... especially when you have Mars in the seventh house of relationship and it is squaring Venus, which is about our relationships, do you push in relationships to get your way, to push for what
no.
you think? No.
That's interesting. That's my Venus in fall. She's very quiet. She's very demure. But my Mars... You know, my husband is a military man. Mars represents the husband. The seventh house represents the husband. Mars is Martian, is military. So, you know, this, from the exoteric angle, I've always looked at this as my military husband. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, even though this is a T-square, and it does play out significantly in my chart. You cannot divorce these three planets from everything else, mm-hmm. from this that interacts with them, from this, Pluto, from Neptune. You know, they're all part and parcel. These things contribute to the activity that's going on here. So there's a lot of activity that's going on here in everything that I do. Pluto and Mars are trine, so in, you know, they have an affinity for each other in the work that they do. They're working it out in a fiery manner, but they're doing it together. It's, like I said, I see things as all working together. So it's high, it's really hard, and you guys are all going to find this when you start doing your own charts. It's hard to isolate one thing. You can't talk about it without getting into the other things that get involved in it.
Okay, well done.
All right, does anybody else have anything that they would like to add before we go on to a little more administrivia stuff?
Or question. You know, you can question BL.
I see a couple of new people have joined us from the beginning. Welcome. I hope you caught enough of this to see what we're doing. Basically, there's a lot of different ways to look at things, and the more you know about astrology, the more that you're able to put together those little tiny pieces that Eva and I have been alluding to. And there's so much more to see that you can't look at in 15, 20 minutes, like Eva pointing out things in mine and me pointing out things in hers. It wasn't the main focus we were looking for, but they were equally important things. Okay, I've got a question here.
Yvonne.
Go ahead, Yvonne.
It's me again. Talk some more about the sextiles, like the 24s that you have in all these different signs.
Okay, it's not just sextiles, it's all kinds of different relationships. The sextile, this one here, is 60 degrees apart, which basically means they're two signs apart. And two signs apart means they have an affinity for each other. Okay, it's going to be the fire and air signs working together, or the earth and water signs working together. The square means they're going to be 90 degrees apart. All right, they don't have an affinity for each other. It's an opportunity to learn the other person's side. It can be stressful, but it's going to be a learning experience once you resolve what the irritation is between them. Trines are an affinity. They're the like elements, three elements working together. They're 120 degrees apart. The opposition is 180 degrees apart, and of course the conjunction is close together. Now with conjunctions you can use wide aspects. The orbs, the degrees apart from the exact, is going to match, you know, the sun and the moon. They typically use 10 degrees, the ascendant. We want to go large with that. I've had one astrologer of note say, if I need to, I'll use a 360 degree orb. Well, technically you're not going to get more than 180 degrees for an orb, but the point is we can find a relationship somehow if we look at it. And even something like a 15 degree and 23 degree, they're very wide, but they're both in the same sign, so they're going to relate to each other somehow. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
So basically the fact that all these things are at 24 degrees or near 24 degrees means they're going to have relationships with everything else that's at or near that same kind of degree.
Dorothy has made a few comments.
Okay, let's see. Your Mars is sextile Neptune, square Venus, trine Pluto, in conjunct Mercury and Uranus. Exactly. Well aspected. Yes, well aspected means they play well together. There's a lot of interaction going on, and that's what I was trying to explain earlier. I can't just say Mars is opposite the ascendant. I can't just say there's a T-square here, because there's all kinds of other things going on behind the scenes that contribute to the delinquency or the goodness of the work that's going on. Lots are playing with my ascendant, which is my sole purpose. So that's good. That's good. In conjunct operates harmoniously? No. The in conjunct is 150 degrees. It doesn't operate harmoniously, but it's a dialogue. And any kind of a dialogue is good. The in conjunct 150 degrees Mars to Mercury and Uranus, they have absolutely nothing in common. It's a fire sign and a water sign. They don't get along well. They're not on the same cross. But they have to learn to relate to each other somehow, and that's what that in conjunct makes them do. It makes them learn to relate to each other. And in conjunct is a similar relationship to a semi-sextile. A semi-sextile would be if I had a planet here in my sixth house at 24 degrees that was semi-sextile to Mars. They're neighbors, so they're going to try and be neighborly, but they have absolutely nothing in common, just like these have nothing in common. But because they're neighbors, they're going to work a little more better. Is that, they're going to work a little closer together, just because they're neighbors and they have to live with each other. It's not so with these here, but this is a dialogue. It's a relationship that they have to set up. And this is part, Mars is part of my T-square with the ascendant. I have to work with that, with Mars, Venus, and the ascendant. And Mercury is the esoteric ruler, so I have to work with that with the ascendant. So these two have to learn to get along if they're both going to work in conjunction with my ascendant. And the opposite, it can be a tug of war, but it can also be a balance of that axis. And the inconjunct that I've got here has to work. I have to learn to walk a mile in these guys' shoes so that I can relate better to my ascendant's purpose.
It is said that with an inconjunct, a compromise of sort has to be reached. That's why you need to communicate. You need to find a way to get along. Otherwise, it can result in ill health. If there's constantly friction and you don't get along, the outcome is usually ill health. So some kind of compromise, some kind of adjustment has to happen.
Right.
Okay, very good.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, this was us telling you about us and showing you basically how we delineate a chart. So you get along with your mate by not being brilliant. Yeah, let's just put it this way. He doesn't believe at all in any of the stuff that I'm studying and that I work with. He thinks it's all a bunch of hooey. But he has kindly agreed not to tell me that too often, and I ignore his opinion when he does. So that's the compromise, that's the adjustment that we've made regarding this and how we communicate. I don't try and tell him anything because he's just going to roll his eyes at me. So we don't communicate that very well. Okay. This is going to be a participating webinar. We want you to participate. We want you to volunteer to have your charts delineated. Several of you have already done that. Several of you have sent us the stuff that we asked for. Others of you still need to do that. The next webinar in this series is going to be on Friday. Oops, I have that twice. Friday, the 1st of August at 8 p.m. That's an unusual date. Not necessarily an unusual time. We'll go ahead.
8 p.m. is 4 p.m. in the afternoon for Eastern Daylight Time.
Right. Three students' charts who we will be delineating next week or next month will be contacted by email prior to, but we expect your participation. You guys have homework to do. If you are volunteering, this is what you need to send us. It's going to be in the handout that we will attach to these slides. We need to know a little bit about yourself, but we expect your active participation. You previously got, and you will get again, the little flat chart with the homework in it. Not only do we want you to do kind of what Eva and I just tried to do, but we want you to practice drawing your chart. This is me practice drawing my chart. I don't think there was anything in my chart before that said I was neat and tidy. I am not. I never got any awards for penmanship, so please excuse this. But what I did do was I took the flat chart that we were given, and I followed Reese's instructions, and I put my natal planets, at least the one that I was looking at, here on the inside. Here's my ruler of the chart, Mercury at 24 Cancer, and I can't divorce it from Uranus, so I added Uranus in there. Here's my Leo Sun. Here is my Venus, the esoteric ruler of my chart, in Virgo. Here's my Moon at 15 Libra, my Neptune kind of sideways at 23 Libra. Here's my Mars because it's involved in that T-square that I had. I put my house cusps on the outside. Here's my ascendant at 22 Gemini, my IC at 2 Virgo, my descendant at 22 Sag, my MC at 2 Pisces. I wrote in the house cusps for the other houses there. Some of them are a little upside down, and I never was. I love those wavy lines there. Nobody else can probably read my writing, but that's my it. I know what it is. I have my own version of shorthand. These are my three key components, Ascendant in Gemini, Moon in Libra, Leo Sun. Or if you look at it another way, I actually have a trine here with all three of the air signs if you add my Earth in Aquarius here. So that tells you a lot about I'm an airhead. The rulers of my charts down here, I put in what those relationships were. The exoteric ruler Mercury is semi-sextile. That's the little glyph for semi-sextile there. My ascendant. The esoteric ruler Venus is square my ascendant. The esoteric ruler of my sun being veiled is Neptune, which is quintile my sun. And the moon is sextile my sun. That Venus ascendant ascendant opposite Mars square Venus is that T-square I had. So, and then I went and I wrote down some key things. This is the soul keynote. I recognize my other self, and in the waning of the one, I grow and glow. Waning of the personality, and the glowing and growing of the soul. The esoteric one for Leo, I am that, and that am I. Leo is fixed and stable. I own those. So I've written my little notes in here. Indecisive from that Leo. No, I'm not that. I think I've overcome that. So I took the things that I mentioned to you in my delineation, and I wrote them in my own little chart with my own little notes. I put my little oppositions here for you, the ones that I think are important. My Sun-Earth axis, the Ascendant-Descendant axis, and the ICMC axis here. So this is basically what I just told you about today, and I've handwritten it out here in my little notes. And that's what we're hoping that you'll do as you practice the glyphs, as you understand your chart a little better, as you take just a couple of things and do it this way and learn all you can about those couple of things, then put that aside and then do another one and look at a couple of more things, because you can't put it all on there. It's going to get a little confusing. So, do we have any questions or comments on how to do this particular part of the homework? Yes. Yvonne, go ahead.
Copy of this too for a guideline?
Sure.
Yes.
I'll put it in with the attachment. It's not going to be these slides, but I'll put it in.
That helps for guidance.
Sure. It just gives you an idea. And it doesn't have to be precise. It has to be what's meaningful to you.
Well, this helps. I had mine in the wrong circles.
Well, there's no right way and there's no wrong way. But the outer circle here gives you a little more room to write the notes. Which is one of the reasons that we've done it this particular way.
Thank you.
So, okay. Then the other thing is, when we get involved, not only are you volunteering to have your chart delineated, but we want you to do it in a similar fashion to what we've done. We want you to look at the ascendant. We want you to look at the esoteric and exoteric keynotes. We want you to look at their attributes, and we want you to give us examples of how you think those are working out and which you think that you're more leaning towards. We want you to give some of the presentation, express that for us, and then we'll do like Eva did with me, and we'll draw you out a little more by asking you questions and telling you things that we've seen. We'll help you set this up prior. This will be some of the behind-the-scenes stuff that we'll do before we get you here on the webinar. But this is the way you're going to learn. You're going to learn by looking at your own chart. You're going to learn by looking at the charts of the people who are near and dear to you, people that you know and understand, so you can say, yeah, I can see that working out with them. You're going to do it with friends. This is how we all start. This is how we all learn.
Right. So. And by now, you all understand how we divided the chart, you know, east and west, or left and right, up and down, north side, south side, above the horizon, below the horizon. All of these things, they're not all that complicated, and I think you can all pretty well understand that. You can pretty well look at the elements. I think you might have a good idea. Where you might run into difficulty might be more with the modes, the crosses, and we can understand that. And then all you need to do is just tell us a little bit about your ascendant with its rulers, the sun and the moon. And we don't expect you to be as detailed as we are, because this is your first attempt, but as has been said, we will offer you all kinds of help. That's what we're here for. But I'll tell you, this is a wonderful way if you're interested in moving forward. That's all for me.
Okay. Anybody else have any comment? Risa, have any comment or anything before we close the...
Risa has a question or something.
Okay. Let me see. Wonderful comprehensive sharing teaching. Details are clear and precise and personal, and we all learn from that. Risa is right. We all learn by looking at other people's chart and seeing how other people are expressing that. Eva and I both have Venus and Virgo in our fourth house, and she described a completely different Venus and Virgo than I described. Mm-hmm. We have a lot in common, but we also had a lot of differences, because we each bring something new to the way that we address this. So I think that's all I see in the way.
Michael Stacy has a question.
Yes. Hello, Michael. Go ahead.
I don't have a question. I just wanted to say that, wow, this is an awful lot, a great lot, a wonderful thing. And as I was sitting here contemplating what has been presented, I'm thinking how to analyze it, if you will, not so much from the standpoint of presented, but how it was presented and how to address each one of those elements.
Mm-hmm. And the handout that I'm going to give you is going to have those elements in it. Basically, I throw a lot of things in there, a lot of details, when I look at it initially. You know, I'm going to look at the keynotes, I'm going to look at the laundry list of good and bad things with the sign, and then I'm going to go through and isolate it and refine it and be discriminating, you know, throw some of this stuff out and just keep the good stuff in there. So I don't want it to be intimidating for you.
No, I think the methodology that you're describing is marvelous.
Good, good.
That's my Venus in Virgo.
It's both our Venus in Virgo.
Right,
As has been said, you've already received the methodology or the template. You'll get it again, and it's not all that hard to follow. It's step by step, and as much as we try to follow it, you know, you sometimes can't be that exacting, but we try to stick to a methodology, and that's what we offer all of you.
Thank you so much.
It is our joy.
Yes, it is. And Risa has added another comment here for us, that the sharing of ourself, of our potentials, of what we see in the chart, it makes the love come forth. And, you know, really, it just helps us all relate better. So thank you for that, Risa. That's basically what this is. We all have this energy, and we're all using this energy. Some of us have more of it than others. Some of us have stelliums, like the stellium that Eva has in Libra or the one that I have in Cancer. But we all have all 12 signs, and we all express that energy. We all have the planets. We all express that same energy. So, okay, did you have more, Michael, or did we? Oops. Did you have another question, Michael, or did
No, I'm all done.
Both hit the hand at the same time. All right, everybody. Well, thank you very much for participating. And like I said, the attachment that I'm going to put or have Brett put on Makara with this recording is going to have a compilation of everything we've done so far in the previous webinars. It's going to have the tools that you need, which we've pretty much taken from the guides that you had in Quest Universal and Great Quest. But it's going to be a one-stop shopping kind of a document. It's going to have the flat wheel in it. It's going to have my little chicken scratched wheel in it. And it'll give you everything that you need, all the tools that you need to be able to do your homework. We would like you not only to participate with us in delineating your own chart, but to take the tools that you're learning each week as you try and understand your co-conspirators here in this webinar. So you can say, hey, I understand them a little bit better and how they're using that particular energy. Okay? So unless anybody else has anything else, I'd like to say goodbye and thank you to Risa and thank you to Eva and thank you to Brett, our behind-the-scenes people, and Joe too. So thank you all, and we hope to see you on 1 August. Friday afternoon. For those of you who the time is not convenient, hopefully you'll be able to catch it in the recording of it. So
bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye, everybody. Let me take everybody off mute really quick so everybody can just say really quick bye before we close up and end the webinar. And I'm sorry that we went a little over.
Michael does it all
the time.
Bye,
thank you.
Bye,
bye,
everybody.
Bye.
Bye.